Welcome to Good Dogs. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Carol Borden, who founded and runs Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, where they breed, raise, and train and place these companion working dogs with people who need them, and all for no cost. We both believe that all dogs can be good dogs, but that dog training starts with people training. And the better you understand your dog, the better you can communicate with them and make them the best canine citizens they can be. This is not specifically a training show. It's also understanding dogs from the outside in, how to read their body language and what they're telling you, and from the inside out, to know that each dog's an individual and needs to be seen as such and lived with alongside us with joy and compassion. I am so delighted to learn that there is a house call vet who can not only come to your home for your average or intense medical reasons, but for behavior, most particularly. The Behavior Clinic for Cats and Dogs is in Northern Westchester, but Dr. Sarah Cutler will go anywhere kind of in the area if you have behavior issues that need her practiced eye. Dr. Cutler, welcome to the show, and I'm very excited to meet you because people are quite at a loss for what to do when they have behavior issues they don't know how to solve, and they certainly don't know how to identify a good dog trainer or cat behaviorist because there's really no kind of gold seal for that, is there? I mean, there's certain organizations a dog trainer can belong to, but what their skills are in dealing with behavior issues is kind of murky, isn't it?
It can be very murky, yes. And you know, as many things in the pet, dog, and cat world, at least in the United States, there are a lot of people that can sell themselves as doing pretty much anything,
yes.
And get away with it.
They can.
So as a veterinarian, when I graduated from vet school, I took an oath, which we all do, which says that first, do no harm. And that is a principle that I stand by with my regular sort of veterinary medicine practice, as well as when counseling owners on helping with training and behavioral issues and anxieties, is the very first thing we want is to not make any problem worse by coming in with rough handling or harsh training methods and things like that. So that's sort of been my driving force to get into the field of behavior, is trying to promote fear-free veterinary handling,
yes.
Fear-free training, education of humans on what it means to take a cat into your home, which is very close to their wild ancestors, or what it means to have a dog with big teeth and who has some normal genetic tendencies that sometimes don't coincide well with like what we humans want in our home.
That's put very diplomatically and correctly. I mean, there are dogs that are hardwired to chase, and there's other
yep.
ones to breed, mm-hmm. to herd, and other ones to defend in the way
exactly.
that the dog might think of being a defender. What do you think is the most pressing reason that people reach out to you and find you? Does it fall in the aggression area? We're talking doggies first. Or is
okay.
it
yes.
fear that they didn't understand was fear and they're misinterpreting it as aggression?
Mm. Well, those are high on the list. I'll tell you that what usually happens when people seek my help is there's an overt problem that has, probably been brewing for a while,
yes.
And it went unrecognized or poorly appreciated, and then there's an episode. And the episode is usually something that's caused a lot of discomfort, and that could be the dog bit someone, or the dog, for example, has such severe storm anxiety that maybe was slowly building up and no one really cared about it until the dog, scrambled out the window and broke out of the house, or chewed the wall, or, peed on the
yes.
carpet or something.
Yes.
So a lot of the times the behavior problems, are they, they've been there, but they've gone maybe, you know, unrecognized. And then it's an episode that'll say, oh my gosh, I really need help, right? And yes, aggression is a big concern. And it gets, you know, people, a lot of other people in the field don't want to deal with it because everyone's nervous about, you know, liability and, you know, getting, people get scared for, you know, for good reasons. When you really try and sort of understand reasons for aggression, and by the way, I like to use the word reactivity.
I like that better too.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a neutral word, and I spend a lot of time kind of explaining terminology and trying to use words that don't demonize the dog. So reactivity just basically means any kind of behavior from a dog's point of, you know, when a dog is barking, growling, lunging, kind of looking scary to move something away from them. It's distance requesting behavior.
Distance requesting, that's a great phrase. Yeah.
So, and most of the time, that behavior, although it looks very scary to us humans, that behavior is actually reflecting a dog who is very scared themselves.
Yes.
They're threatened. They're suspicious. They're nervous. They're uneasy. They're doing everything they have in their toolbox to make it clear that they don't want that thing to get any closer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the bigger the dog, the scarier it looks. But most of the time, this is coming from a source of anxiety. And just on that note, when you use the word guarding, there's a reason why, for example, German Shepherds, who for the most part are pretty high-strung, nervous dogs.
That's
not
right.
All of them, but many of them.
Yes.
That characteristic right there is what we humans have sort of taken advantage of because they're so trainable to be reactive because they're nervous and suspicious of strange people. So it sort of goes full circle, right? So then
yes.
People are attracted to that behavior because they want to have a guard dog and they want to feel that their family is safe. But then they're upset when the same dog, you know, bites the cousin that comes over because the dog doesn't know that the cousin's a cousin, right? The dog.
Yeah.
So you know, what the dog looks like is, to us humans, is often very different than what the dog is actually experiencing themselves.
It's really well put. When you talk about trainers not wanting to deal with what is mistakenly called aggression, I'm think of Wanda, who is one of my Weimaraners, the only one I got as a puppy. Everybody, all the other Weims have been from Weim Rescue at various ages. So I thought, this is great, blank slate. I can just socialize the heck out of her and expose her to everything. And this is going to be the piece of cake, like bomb-proof, fabulous, stable, I'm cool in my own skin dog. Not. She hit puberty, and it all changed. As if she'd, you know, if you had adopted her at that age, you would have said, ooh, she must have had a terrible time. Ooh, she must have been attacked by a dog, hit by people, whatever it might be. And it wasn't. That's her nervous system. So she went to a puppy class. She didn't like it. She didn't want these other dogs around her coming at her. And she did all the things that she was asked to do, even go through, you know, agility type, you know, mm-hmm. tubes and mm-hmm. stuff. But she really wasn't comfortable there. And so I didn't push it. And then we got out in a field, and she drove away another dog. Now, some of might say, gee, she was going to attack the dog. No, she was driving it away. That was clear to me.
Yeah.
So I called up the person giving the puppy class, and I said, I'd like to have some private sessions with you to work on her reaction to seeing other dogs. And she said, oh, I don't do aggression. I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah.
You don't do aggression. First of all, she didn't aggress. You know, it's exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Distance requesting behavior that someone misunderstands, even an accredited dog trainer says, no, I don't want to mess with that. I don't do aggression. But dog's behavior is a full toolbox, as you said. A dog that doesn't ever display that might be the world's most kickback lab or golden or even a poodle.
A resilient dog.
Yeah, resilient, like emotionally so chill that they're okay with stuff going on around them, human machinery, other dogs. I think it's really great that you're there. And I hope that anyone listening that has issues with a dog and thinking, is this a problem? If you ask that, it's sort of like a drinking problem. If you ask if someone has a drinking problem, you already have pretty much acknowledged it because you asked. And if you think your dog has a behavior problem, then it does. Yeah. And you're not going to solve it on your own because there are mysteries to it that a professional can help solve quickly and keep it from escalating. I bet you've rarely been called when somebody wants to, quote unquote, nip it in the bud. Have you? I'd be happy for you if you did.
Well, you know, that's interesting because that expression, that sort of does stem from, you know, this belief that you can, say, cure a problem or fix the problem or correct it, right? So, my dog is, you know, nervous when new children come to the home and my dog growls and I really need to nip this in the bud.
Good
I need
point.
To stop it. This
yeah,
is
you're
unacceptable
right.
behavior.
You're right.
I don't like it. What do I do? Right. And so, so in that example, there's a lot of education that has to happen.
That's
because,
right.
a correction, a traditional correction in that context would probably make the dog a lot worse. So if
Definitely.
Your dog growls mm-hmm. at a new child who enters the home, you need to say, oh, gee, my dog is uncomfortable. It's
yes.
communicating
yes.
with a growl.
Yes.
We don't want to get mad at the dog because then we're going to start to add tension into the situation. The dog is feeling uncomfortable as it is. So you need to take that growl and you know,
respect
get right
it.
In there and say, okay, we're going to separate the dog from the new child. And no, we're not going to let the new child come up and pet the dog. And we're going to take the dog out for a walk or we're going to, you know, give the dog a treat so that the dog sort of gets to associate, oh, the arrival of a new person means mom gives me a high value, you know, marrow bone or something.
Yes.
So in other words, in answer to your question, I do have people that come and say, I need to fix it. And
yeah.
then I always sort of have a little sinking feeling in my stomach because it means I really need to sort of go extra on the education there, as opposed to maybe somebody like you who would come to me and say, gee, you know, my Weimaraner did this and, you know, I need help. I recognize I need help. But you're not coming to have me put on like a prong collar
right,
to,
right.
you know, hold your dog back and yank the dog's neck in order to so-called correct the problem, right?
Or as,
we
or
know
as,
that would...
Right. Or as we say, to if you extinguish the growl and punish
right.
or extinguish the growl in whatever way, we obviously are way against punishment these days, but you extinguish the growl, you're opening the door to a bite.
Exactly.
Because the growl is the warning,
yep.
I mm-hmm. need space. So
exactly.
I guess, yeah, then you need to either have a lifestyle minus children if the dog is that uncomfortable, or give the dog total protection by not having
yep.
it in close proximity. It's never going to feel 100% okay. The marrow bone will take some of the edge off, but you're never going to leave that dog out in a yard with three children running around.
Absolutely.
Ever.
Absolutely.
You know,
correct.
And so I think that's education is obviously a big part of what you do.
Yeah.
What about medication? I know that the kind of the pendulum has swung back and forth
mm-hmm.
on that. The idea
mm-hmm.
that you would give back in the day, and even with kitties, and we should talk about them in a minute, the idea you would give Prozac to a dog to somehow make it happier,
mm-hmm.
cheerier, less anxious, less annoyed. Is that an idea that's gone out the window?
Oh, no. In fact, I do prescribe, again, remember that in my practice, I'm dealing with a high number of dogs with anxieties and phobias.
Yes.
So in my practice, I am using Prozac quite a bit.
No kidding. That's great.
You know, yes. And, you know, people who have ownership of dogs are going to come to their vet appointments or the behavior appointments with their own backgrounds and their own experiences and their, you know, maybe their cultural beliefs about medication for humans.
Right, right.
And that all does spill down to, you know, medicating their dogs. So I'm not a person who, you know, pushes drugs on people. I don't want to turn a dog into a vegetable. I don't want to change the dog's personality. And those are common concerns that people have.
Interesting.
However, many, many times we've got such significant anxieties that are either genetic and they've been there forever, or they've been made worse by the environment. For example, a lot of my dogs, my patients that live in New York City and have severe noise sensitivity, you know, this is a quality of life issue for these dogs.
Absolutely.
Maybe they don't have a country home to go to, or they don't have a, you know, a terrace that's quiet, you know. So when we have those significant, you know, real quality of life issues, I do recommend medication. The other time, you know, and this is sort of the sad part of this interview, is there are a great number of dogs that, when they arrive at my doorstep, have received fairly significant rough handling, maybe by previous owners, maybe by trainers.
Yep.
Maybe the dogs have been sent to what's so-called boot camp.
Oh, God, those things frighten me.
Yeah, and so sometimes the dog that I'm treating basically needs, like, serious rehab because of the human handling that it's received. And so maybe the dog started out a little anxious, maybe the dog started out with some issues, and maybe that's what led it to the rough handling. But then it's, you know, it's been treated with, you know, aversive,
yes,
training techniques.
Yes.
They're a mess. And so sometimes I am medicating dogs to kind of help them with the trauma that they have lived through.
Wow.
So that's
sad.
That's the sad side of that. Yeah.
Because in your,
a lot of that,
yeah, I'm sure in your mind's eye, you imagine that dog 6 months or a year earlier, when mm-hmm. had the people known about you and understood about early intervention, the dog would
right.
not have gone so far, or may have had a previous owner. As I mean, there
exactly.
really are rehomed dogs that the people who had them probably didn't deserve them. Dr. Cutler, we have run out of time. I want to have a separate conversation with you about
okay.
cats, because
okay.
they are such a,
too,
such a
them.
Different species and so beloved by their people and often misunderstood. Dr. Sarah Cutler owns the Behavior Clinic for Dogs and Cats in Westchester. She'll go into the city. She goes all around northern Westchester. I hope you don't need her, but if you do, we're very glad to have you out there on behalf of our dogs. Thank you, Dr. Cutler.
Thank you, Tracy. It was a pleasure.